everyday people like you and me, living their lives one minute, and the next they lay dying, having never known or believed the message of salvation. They traveled from this world to one beyond, but what they found was pure terror. They return, and these are their true stories.
So I knew, see, I had a condition that was called acute hemorrhagic necrotic pancreatitis. You don't live with this disease. I was an atheist. Now, see, it's very easy to be an atheist when you're successful. You have worked your way from Oklahoma welfare to being one of the most powerful men in your part of the country, one of the most powerful men in the state of Oklahoma in relationship to political. It's very easy to be an atheist when you have done all of that. Man can sit back and say, I don't need God. What is God? But it's very difficult to be an atheist when you're laying on your deathbed, because you begin to think, what if these people are right? When I'm laying on my deathbed and knowing that I'm going to die, guess who I thought about? I thought about, what if Ron is right? What if there is a heaven and a hell? And so the most immediately, the most pressing thought in my mind is, how do I get saved? What is saved? As I'm laying there in bed, I would begin to fade away. I would begin to fade away, and as I would fade away, I would begin to go down. Now, it was like darkness. It was like, it was so dark. It was like the very darkness just penetrated into your very, very being. And as I left, and I can tell you I left my body, because I remember when I came back into my body. You know, I don't know where I was out of my body. Now, there are people that talk about a light. There are people that talk about floating above. There are people that talk about a feeling of warmth and love. I didn't feel any of that. I felt none of that. I felt untold terror. Untold terror. Because I knew that if I ever went all the way, if I slipped all the way, I would never get back. Now, in my beings of beings, I knew that.
And as he was talking to me, it appeared like the ambulance literally exploded in flames. I thought it had actually blown up. It filled with smoke, and immediately I was moving through that smoke as if through a tunnel. And after some period of time, coming out of the smoke and out of the darkness, I began to hear the voices of a multitude of people screaming and groaning and crying. But as I looked down, the sensation was looking down upon a volcanic opening and seeing fire and smoke and people inside of this burning place screaming and crying. They were burning, but they weren't burning up. They weren't being consumed. But the most terrible part of it, I began to recognize many of the people that I was seeing in these flames, as if a close-up lens on a camera was bringing their faces close to me. I could see their features and see the agony and the pain and the frustration. And a number of them began to call my name and said, Ronnie, don't come to this place. There's no way out. There's no escape. If you come here, there's no way out. And the smell was like sulfur, like an electric welder. And the stench was terrible.
And when I came to, Dr. Olives was giving the CPR. And he asked me what was the matter, because I was looking so scared and so forth. And I had told him I'd been to hell, I needed help. And he said, well, keep your health to yourself. I'm a doctor, I'm trying to save your life. You need a minister for that. As he was giving me CPR, he was trying to install a pacemaker with the other hand and do it with one. I would fade out. And then he'd start again, bring me back. I watched what was going on, like some people say, I was floating in the air or up on the ceiling. I was up above it and could look down and see things. And I kept asking, please help me, please help me. I don't want to go back to hell.
I'm lying in bed and she told me how much she loved me, and I told her how much I loved her, and this makes me really sad. And we made our goodbyes. She knew it was over. And I knew. And it was just so hard looking at her, crying like that, and I just closed my eyes. Just let it go. I went unconscious. I probably was unconscious for a very short while. A few minutes, probably. And I was conscious again. And I looked, opened my eyes and looked, and I was standing up next to my bed. And I had a sneaking suspicion that the body in the bed was me. But I didn't want to think about that because that was too scary. So I'm getting really agitated and upset because this is all too weird. You know, this can't be happening. It's impossible. I've got a hospital gown on, and it's like really, everything's really real. And I hear people calling me outside the room, and they're saying to me in soft, gentle voices, Howard, you gotta come with us now. Come quickly. Come out here. I left the room, which was real, clear, bright, and went into the hallway, which was dank and hazy and followed these people. First, they were sort of syrupy sweet to get me to go with them, and then when I was going along with them, it was like, hurry up, keep moving, you know, shut up, stop asking questions, you know, it started getting more ugly. And so we get into complete darkness. I'm absolutely terrified. These people are very hostile, I don't know where I am. I said, I'm not going to go with you any further. They said, you're almost there. And we start to fight. I was trying to get away from them. They were pushing and pulling at me. And there are now a lot of them. What originally had been like a handful, now was, since it was darkness, maybe hundreds or thousands. I have no idea. And they're playing with me. You know, clearly they could have just destroyed me if they wanted to. They didn't want to destroy me. What they wanted to do was they wanted to inflict pain on me because they derived, pleasure isn't the right word, but they derived satisfaction out of the pain that I experienced.
The story of Kenneth Hagin's near-death experience is spectacular. In April of 1933, Hagin was bedridden. He had been ill with a deformed heart from birth. On the evening of the 22nd, he took a turn for the worse. His family stayed by his side and waited for the arrival of the doctor. Suddenly, a pain shot through his heart like lightning. He was convinced he was living his last few moments. He states, "My toes seemed to go numb. This numbness spread to my feet, my ankles, my knees, my hips, my stomach, my heart, and I leaped out of my body. I knew I was outside of my body. I could see my family in the room, but I couldn't contact them."
Randy, can't you hear me?
As he tried to communicate with his family members, he felt himself leaving the room and falling into what seemed to be a downward well or cavern. But as the darkness surrounded him, he was convinced that this hellish place was real. Hagin tells of calling out into the darkness, "God, I belong to the church. I've been baptized in water." I was conscious of the fact that some kind of creature met me at the bottom of that pit. I didn't look at it. My gaze was riveted on the gate. As the creature grabbed Hagin, he said, "That place shook. It just trembled." Hagin remembers praying as he ascended towards her, "Oh God, I come to you in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ. I ask you to forgive me of my sins. I want you to know it was like a 2-ton weight lifted off my chest." Dr. Kenneth Hagin eventually recovered from his heart condition. He is known internationally as the founder and president of Rhema Bible School.